Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Surviving in a Partisan World by Lama Kathy Wesley. As the 2020 U.S. presidential election approaches, more people are reporting feeling stressed and concerned about the future. Lama Kathy gives a Buddhist perspective on social and relational dualities in society and encourages a middle path of constructive engagement instead of partisan bickering. The session concludes with brief instructions for calming the mind. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Hi, this is Lama Kathy saying hello for the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Sunday Dharma Talk, the Sunday 1 p.m. Dharma Talk. So really happy to see all of you virtually through Facebook and also from my friends who are on YouTube. So thanks very much for joining today. I have some news to discuss at the top, just so you know. Some of you were able to come to Columbus KTC yesterday and see our construction celebration. So I want to thank all of the volunteers who made it possible to go down to our construction site at the Columbus KTC yesterday, and there was a tent. We had people setting up a tent, and we had little paper bags of gifts. Hey, hostess gifts, it's a thing. So we had gifts to give to people, small packets of rice blessed by His Holiness Karmapa, as well as tiny bags of dirt from the Columbus KTC construction site. So I'm just really delighted that we had about not quite 50 people come for the celebration yesterday. But if you didn't get one of the little goodie packets with a pin with Kemper Rinpoche's picture on it, and the little packets of rice and little packages of dirt from our sacred ground downtown, fear not, because there will be other events coming up, such as an opportunity to sign your name on one of the steel beams that's going to go in the center construction and so forth. So we'll have other opportunities for you to come down to the site and to practice social distancing with your masks and everything else and participate. And we'll have those little goodies for you there too. So in case you missed the goodies yesterday and you want to make sure you get some, that's where you can get them. And I also want to thank the board members, Kim Miracle Director, Chuck Drake, the Assistant Director, Treasurer Lance Moyer, Secretary Marjorie Hill Langston, and then also our Member at Large, Eric Weinberg, for putting your efforts in to make the celebration a success, as well as all of the volunteers, Anna McCain and Linda Parsons and Sally Crandall. I just want to say that there's like no end of things. Joseph Rancic did the video, and Chantal Sapp was on hand, and then Chuck's four-person traffic team. It was really great to be able to actually see people, many of them for the first time in 6 months, down at the KTC property. So just thanks to everyone, and I hope that you will enjoy the photos and videos that we're going to be sharing in the coming days from the event so that you can see for yourself how it looks to have a hole in the ground, because you could see the spot where we're going to put our handicap ramp. You could see the spot where we're going to put the shrine area and the community center, room and children's play area. It's great. It's like you can kind of figure out where it is in that pile of dirt. So it's very inspiring after 4.5 years to be able to start the construction, and the Hanlon Rinaldi Construction Company team has been great, as well as our two project managers, Gavin and Alan. So thanks to you guys too. So that's the news. I wanted to start with some news, and then I wanted to follow with a short Dharma talk. There'll be a Dharma talk next week also at 1 o'clock. But I wanted to let you know that there will be a little bit of a switch in topic for today. Because as you many of you heard this past week, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the female member of the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, passed away on the eve of Rosh Hashanah, as a matter of fact. And she, her memory has caused a lot of people to feel some concern in their heart, because when you have an older person in your life who you have admired and who has acted as a sort of protector for you, or that you feel is sort of a protector of your life and goodness and well-being, when such a person passes away, we'll feel a little bit of grief. We'll feel some fear, and we'll feel some uncertainty. So I decided that for today, I'm going to change the topic that I'm going to talk about. I was going to talk about the courage to change. And I will be talking about that at my next KTC Dharma talk. But today I wanted to address people's fears and concerns, because I think right now we're living through one of the more difficult periods of human history. And because of the coronavirus pandemic and so forth, we feel a lot of what I would call existential fear. We have the fear that as a human species that we may be endangered, and we begin to withdraw into ourselves at moments like this, and to sort of bring ourselves in, and to have the feeling of wishing to protect ourselves in a situation that we feel is threatening to us. Having to wash hands, wear masks, socially distance, and so forth, it has been really difficult for people. And the last 6 months has been a trial for many people, especially folks like me who have anxiety and who have difficulties from, what did my friend call it, unhealthy coping mechanisms from childhood. We tend to be a little more anxious than the average person. And so that we'll probably feel this existential threat in a slightly different way. But what comes from these feelings of fear and threat is the wish to withdraw into oneself to protect oneself. And this is a very normal, natural part of being a human being. But the problems that can arise from this are many. Sometimes when we withdraw into ourselves, we become sad and depressed, and we begin to isolate ourselves and to not engage with people who care about us, and so then become more anxious and more concerned and more of a feeling more isolated than before. And the other thing that can happen besides the feeling of isolation is fear. I remember one time my teacher, Kenpo Carter Rinpoche, was asked about stress and fear. And Rinpoche said that fear was one of the most basic human emotions, and that he said it comes from our feeling that we have a separate self, different from others. And not only do we have this separate self that's different from others, we grasp it as though it were permanent and real and unchanging. And because we tend to grasp to our self-concept, I am this person who has these thoughts, who has these feelings, I am this person. Once we begin to define ourselves as separate, then we also define others as being those people or things out there. And we then tend to think of them as being solid, real, permanent, and unchanging. And as we do this, we create duality. We create a duality, self and other. And once we've created self and other, there's, from the Buddhist point of view, this grasping towards self and the fear that comes with this grasping towards self, the feeling of needing to be protected, creates methods or thoughts in our mind that may not be healthy. We may encounter errors in thinking. We may think that certain people are friends and must be protected, and others are enemies and must be avoided or counteracted. And so these two accompanying emotions of anger and attachment can begin to make our minds churn and churn like water running down a steep hillside. And because of this churning, it's very hard for us to feel any kind of inner safety and stability, because not only is our external environment giving us signals that cause us to feel fear, our internal feelings about those things also roil up like roiling water in a stream, and they make us feel unstable. So fear, which I personally, this is not a Buddhist teaching, I personally associate fear with bewilderment, because when we don't know who we are, when we don't experience our minds as our minds really are, we then develop the self-concept and we develop fear. And so for me, fear is so basic because it's about this basic existential feeling of existing. And so because we fear a threat, then we fear that our self is going to be diminished or even destroyed. And so because of this back and forth of fear, which I associate with bewilderment, and then attachment and aversion, this is what the Buddha taught were the three mental poisons that cause so much of our suffering: bewilderment, anger, and attachment. Sometimes they're called ignorance, attachment, and aversion. So whether you call them ignorance or bewilderment, attachment or clinging, and aversion or a hatred, these three negative mental afflictions keep our confusion about ourselves and the world going and going and going and going. And you can even see how this is reflected or manifested in our everyday lives right now. I decided to title this talk "Surviving in a Partisan World," because so many people now, since we're only a few weeks out from the national election for president of the United States, since we have this election coming up, a lot of people are having trouble on social media. They're feeling upset and they're feeling angry. So what are they feeling? They're feeling bewilderment and fear, right? They're feeling aversion and they're feeling attachment. So people are upset about this this self-governance. Usually you would think that self-governance would be something that would bring people joy. But in our current environment that's very partisan, I think a lot of people are afraid because they see so much fear and attachment and hatred on all sides in politics. The one side thinks the other side is bad, and then this side thinks that this side is bad. And it's all really not that people are bad, but that they are roiling with anger, attachment, and bewilderment. But since they don't see that, they naturally think that the problem is not their own mental afflictions, but that person over there who disagrees with me. And so then they set up situations in which they can fight. They set up fights, whether the fight is occurring over the dinner table with your relatives, or whether the fight is occurring on the telephone with a friend, or whether the fight is erupting on social media, where one person says something nasty and then the other person has to say something nasty. We're experiencing some real difficulties right now. And this is not making our unstable mind any more stable. In fact, this is making our unstable mind even more unstable. So the reason I wanted to talk about this was because instability is part of the human condition, according to Buddhism, because 2,500 years ago, when the Buddha gave his first teachings, he said, "We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts, we make the world." And he said, if we think, speak, and act with an impure mind, then suffering follows us, just as surely follows the wheel that on the ox cart that the ox is drawing. And if we think, speak, and act with a pure mind of selflessness, happiness follows us like a shadow that's unshakable. These basic teachings of the Buddha, that we are what we think, all that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. This basic Buddhist teaching gives us the power to bring stability to our own minds. And so even though the exterior world is full of instability, through the practices of meditation, we can actually begin to bring more stability to our inner experience of our own minds. So I wanted to make sure that I said this, because in this partisan world, people often fall into all or nothing thinking. They'll say, this side is evil and this side is good. This side couldn't possibly be good. This side couldn't possibly be evil, and so on. We tend to divide things into the basic dualism that we experience when we experience our minds and think that the thoughts in our mind are other than the mind that is having it. Because if you remember basic Buddhist teaching, the Buddha said the mind was like an ocean, vast and deep. And the thoughts, feelings, and emotions that we have are like the waves on that ocean. When the waves are heaving up out of the ocean, we might think for a moment that somehow that wave is separate from the sea, but then it inevitably falls again back into the ocean, and we see that it was never separated from being seawater. Whether it rises up and looks like a sea monster, or if it looks like a swan, no matter what that water wave looks like, it never stops being water. And that way, in the same way, although we have attachment, aversion, and ignorance, and think that as the waves of our thoughts, feelings, and emotion, the waves of our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, as they rise, we may think of them as being terrible and awful, but they will inevitably fall back into the mind itself. And they were never separate from the mind, those thoughts, feelings, and emotions, no matter when they occurred or what they look like. They were never, ever separate from being mind itself. And this brings me to a point that Kempo Karthar Rinpoche used to make. He said, when we, as human beings, fail to understand the nature of our mind, and fail to understand that our thoughts, feelings, and emotions are just momentary waves on the ocean of thought, the ocean of mind, these thoughts, feelings, and emotions are just waves on the ocean of the mind. When we don't realize that, and we think that everything is solid, real, permanent, and unchanging, when we think that way, we will our happiness will rise and fall with our thoughts, and we will always be at the mercy of external things. But he said, if we can practice meditation, and by practicing meditation bring some stability to our experience of our own minds, if we can bring some stability to the experience of our own minds, then no matter what is going through our mind, whether the thought is a happy thought, or whether the thought is an ugly thought, or even a painful thought, we can slowly learn through the practice of mindfulness, how to let go of all thoughts, and working on letting go of thoughts, we can begin to quiet the rushing water of our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, and feel a little bit more inner stability. So this is what he said. And he said this in answer to an interesting question. He was asked one time, Rinpoche, what is stress? What causes stress in human beings? What's stress? And he gave a really simple answer that may seem to be overly simple, but it was really meaningful. He said, stress comes from not recognizing this nature of your mind as being vast and deep, and not recognizing that your thoughts, feelings, and emotions are just waves on that ocean. Not realizing that, we rise with the happy thoughts and we fall with the unhappy thoughts, and we're always experiencing stress of one kind or another. But he said, if you recognize the nature of your mind and see that your mind is the same, your mind's awareness is the same no matter what is on your mind, no matter what is manifesting on your mind, that your mind's basic nature is always the same. He said, if you realize that, then, he said, you will not feel stress. And so he said, the reason we feel stress is because we can't rest like this. We're just learning how to meditate. We're beginners in some ways at learning how to stabilize our mind. And because we're beginners at stabilizing our mind, it's not easy for us to do it. And he said, when you get more experience in quieting the mind and bringing the mind to rest, he said, you will not feel the highs and the lows quite as high and quite as low. You'll be closer to the middle, which is great because the Buddha called his path the middle path between the extremes of existence and non-existence and so forth. So what Rinpoche said was, if we could cultivate mindfulness and learn how to let go of thoughts that arise, he said, we will be able to stabilize our mind and see that it is the same no matter what is happening. And so because our world has become so partisan, and I was observing to a friend the other day, it's almost like people in the absence of mainstream religions, a lot of the mainstream religions of the world are losing membership. And I don't know whether it's economic pressure or if it's some karmic thing that's happening with people, but they're losing membership. But what's happening at the same time is we see this flourishing of political parties, but not just political parties, small factions of political parties that say, I believe in this conspiracy theory, I believe in this conspiracy theory, I believe in this conspiracy theory, that everything is becoming fragmented. And as these things are becoming fragmented, and the internet is, of course, while it's helping us communicate today, and I can't deny the delight at being able to talk to you through the internet is allowing a lot of us to exercise our bewilderment, our attachment, and our aversion. It's giving us new methods of exercising our negative mental afflictions, because then we press forward our ideas and tell other people they're wrong, and we try to argue, and no one has learned the middle path of compromise. It's either all or nothing, and there's no middle way. So I almost feel that we have, many of us, become radicalized by politics and have taken politics to be our new religion. And so if we treat politics and our political beliefs like a religion, then of course we're going to hate those people and like those people and have more duality. It's almost like we've decided that we're going to kind of give up on the idea of compromise, and we're going to kind of give up on the idea of caring about everybody and just make it about the duality of winners and losers. So we have to find a way to de-radicalize ourselves. It's going to be virtually impossible to de-radicalize our uncles and aunts and cousins and siblings. We're just not going to be able to do that. The people who believe in conspiracy theories, we can't de-radicalize them. But what we can do is make a strong effort to de-radicalize ourselves in so that we can see a middle path. We can see something that's in the middle, that's away from the extreme of all or nothing. So that was what I wanted to talk about today, was just to encourage everybody to do what you can to meditate and to let go of extremism in all of its forms. If you find yourself arguing with people, back up. If you, I remember my friends in, you know, I love the 12-step traditions because they have so many great quotes and great slogans. One of my favorite 12-step slogans has to do with what you do when you're feeling overwhelmed, whether you're overwhelmed with ignorance or bewilderment, attachment or aversion. If you're overwhelmed, the word they use is halt, H-A-L-T, halt. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If you're hungry or angry or lonely or tired, halt, stop. Stop right there. Stop right where you are and take care of yourself. Do something that helps your mind. At that moment, for most people, it's going to be taking one deep breath and just letting it out. I think this is something that we can and should do when we begin to feel overwhelmed. And one of my other teachers, the Venerable Akong Rinpoche, he passed away a few years ago. He taught a breathing technique. He has a book called Taming the Tiger. I will write it in the chat on Facebook, and you can see it later. Taming the Tiger. He has a series of exercises for people. It's meant to be non-Buddhist, but there are some Buddhist terms in it. But it's meant to be for average people who want to bring more stability to their minds. And they do this. One of the things they start with is just breathing. Breathing in for a count of five. Holding for a count of five. And breathing out through the mouth to a count of five. And then breathing in again, holding, breathing out. You would do this three or four or five times. And then he taught an exercise where you close your eyes and quickly mentally scan your body, looking for places that are tense, that feel tense, and that feel pain. And that once you get down to the soles of your feet, you work back up again, noting all of those areas of tension. And then at the conclusion, when you've returned up to the top of your head, you imagine that your body is a vessel filled with water and that the plug comes out from your feet. And that all of the water then drains out, draining out all of your stress and tension and negativity and hard feelings and so on. And having drained out all of those things, you move into the third step of the practice, which is imagining that there's a gate in front of you in space. And as you breathe out, you think all of your thoughts, feelings, and emotions go through the gate. And on the other side of that gate, they turn into the golden light of universal compassion, which first floods your room and blesses you, and then fills your home, the neighborhood, the world, and the universe. And in this way, no matter what you're feeling, you don't have to judge how you're feeling. You don't have to say, it's bad. I am feeling mad and it's bad to be mad. You can actually let all of the anger go through the gate, and it becomes the golden light of universal compassion. If you're feeling fear and attachment, you can let go of all of that and send it through the gate, and it becomes the golden light of universal compassion, and so on. And even the feeling of being overwhelmed and not knowing what to do, just let it all go through the gate. It turns into the golden light of universal compassion, and it benefits you and blesses you and then everyone in your home and then everyone in the neighborhood and the universe. If you think about it, these exercises are based on the teachings that we discussed at the beginning of the talk today, the idea that mind is vast and deep, and that the thoughts and feelings and emotions on top of the of that are manifestations of the mind are only temporary, intermittent manifestations, and that they all dissolve back into the vast emptiness of the mind. And remember Rinpoche, Kempo Rinpoche's statement? He said, stress comes from not being able to rest comfortably in mind's nature as it is, this vast, empty, and yet luminous awareness. And so he said, when you train in this, in resting in this vast, empty, luminous awareness of mind itself, we become more accustomed to it, and we are able to return to it as though it were a home that we could always go to at any moment. And so in this way, if we can practice this kind of mindfulness, and even if we can't, if we're overwhelmed, we use these three exercises, the breathing in for the count of five, holding for a count of five, and breathing out for a count of five. That's stage one. Stage two is noting the stress and tension in the body from top to bottom and back up again, and then using the imaginary water technique where all of the negativity flows out of us like water, and that we then practice openness by imagining that all of our complex thoughts, feelings, and emotions go through a gate and become their basic nature, which is the golden light of universal compassion. It's symbolized by the golden light of universal compassion. And so if we can do this, if we can do this very simple exercise, this will help us a lot to de-radicalizing ourselves when we're feeling very pent up and very afraid. There are a few other things that we can do when we're feeling afraid, when we're feeling the bewilderment, attachment, and aversion. One of the things we can do is remember our potential. And I think that this is the that this is an outgrowth of what we spoke about earlier. Remembering that we have a mind that can slowly be stabilized through the practice of meditation and slowly be experienced through the practice of meditation, through the practices of awareness and so on. Remembering our potential. In Buddhism, we're a little bit parochial. We call it Buddha nature. It doesn't have to just be Buddha nature. We can say it's the nature of our minds. And so remembering our potential to awaken to our Buddha nature, to practice stability, to practice change, remembering our potential is probably the first thing we can and should do when we're feeling stress. And we can do that by doing these exercises that will help us to remember our potential for inner change. And then additionally, we can remember our Buddhist teachings that we've received on refuge and bodhicitta. Refuge is consists of thinking of the Buddha, who is the enlightened teacher, thinking of the Buddha as our teacher, his teachings, the Dharma, as our path, and his community of practitioners as our community and family of practitioners. So these three jewels of refuge, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Kempo Karta Rinpoche practiced the giving of the vow of refuge. He practiced it the 40 years that he was in the United States. Many times a year, he granted the vow of refuge to his Dharma students. And what he would always say to them would be, if you're feeling unstable in your mind, he said, think of the Buddha and pray to the Buddha. Now, later on, I learned about Buddhist prayer in that when we pray to the Buddha, we're not asking an all-powerful being to change our reality. What we're asking for is for our older sibling, the saint Buddha. We're asking the Buddha to act as our older sibling and to help us feel protected. In other words, he reminds us of our own potential. And by reminding us of our own potential, he has intrinsic value, and we have intrinsic value. And so turning toward the Buddha as our teacher, his teaching as our path, and the community as our community, is a way of remembering our potential, and it's a way of taking refuge in and being protected by our knowledge of our potential. Secondly, not just should we remember our refuge. When we are upset, we can, and when we're upset and unhappy, we can also remember our refuge when we're happy. When we see beautiful things, we can mentally offer them to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for the benefit of suffering beings. When we're happy, when something good happens to us, rather than just being full of self-centered satisfaction, we can think, may all beings have what I have. When we're feeling sad, instead of feeling the crushing weight of our own self-disappointment, we can think, may all beings be free from these feelings, and may we all become Buddhas, which is the complete freedom from these. And so by practicing refuge, we can practice refuge both when we are sad and when we're happy. And those of you who have learned about bodhicitta, bodhi means awakening and citta means mind. So the mind of awakening, bodhicitta, there are two types. There's the aspiration bodhicitta and the action bodhicitta. Aspiration is the aspiration to attain inner stability and Buddhahood for the sake of others. And the action bodhicitta is practicing the six perfect virtues that we spoke about just a few weeks ago. Generosity, ethics, patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. And so by practicing meditation, taking refuge, practicing the bodhisattva mind of wishing to be of benefit to ourselves and others, we can actually begin to calm our minds down when they are upset. And finally, if we can remember the truth of impermanence and the truth of karma and the truth of interdependence, if we can remember these basic truths of Buddhism, that all things are impermanent and all things are changing always, that if we can also remember that all things are interdependent and we all depend upon each other for compromise. We depend on each other to help save each other from stress and unhappiness, that we are all actually have a responsibility to one another to take care of one another. If we can think about impermanence and interdependence and the fact that what we do, think, and say impacts our experience of the world. Those are the teachings on karma. If we can think like this and remember these things, then it will give us something to hold on to. It will give us some strength in this time of destabilization. So that's what I wanted to talk about today, was to talk about how to survive in a partisan environment, and how to bring some stability to our mind in the midst of it. So to summarize, the reason I wanted to talk about this was because a lot of people are expressing fear and uncertainty as we face an upcoming national election for president. And a lot of people have been destabilized by the deaths of great people who fought for justice in the past, such as Congressman John Lewis, who passed away a few months ago, and then Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who passed away yesterday. When we see these people leave the stage of our lives, we feel sad, and we feel a little bit fearful and concerned. And so if we can see ourselves in such a way that we care for ourselves with kindness, and we try to step back from the brink of thinking all or nothing thinking, and if we can step back from angry engagement in political dialogue, I think this might help us a little bit as we face the next few weeks. And if we can practice good self-care, such as doing the exercises from Taming the Tiger, the exercises of breath awareness and of letting go of thoughts, feelings, and emotions, and taking on the practices of generosity and goodness and love, hopefully this will help us to experience a more stable mind during the upcoming weeks. I'm going to conclude today with a short meditation, and you can join in and we'll practice just for a few minutes together. We'll start by sitting in a comfortable position, whether we're sitting on the floor or in a chair. If you're sitting in a chair, your feet can be flat on the floor, about hip width apart. If you're sitting cross-legged, you can place your hands palm downward on your legs. Try to straighten the body. You can tuck your chin in slightly. You can either close your eyes lightly or have them partly closed and gazing downward. You're not looking, you're gazing. Reflect on your motivation for practicing meditation. Think, I am practicing meditation for the benefit of all beings. Then taking a one deep breath and breathing out. Just allow your breath to come and go naturally. Following with your attention the breath as it goes out, and following with your attention the breath as it comes in. Next, we'll practice a little compassion meditation, imagining that in front of us in space are all of the beings of the world. We think our mind's basic nature is goodness, and it is vast and inexhaustible. And our mind has the limitless capacity to accept and the limitless capacity to give. Then we observe the breath again. When the breath goes out, we imagine that goodness flows from us with our breath, and it touches all of the beings of the world and brings them relief. As we breathe in, we remove from them all that is complex, all that is difficult, all that is painful. And as this touches us, it meets our pure motivation of the Bodhisattva. All of the suffering we have removed from them dissolves into nothing and disappears. Then with the out-breath, we give goodness to all beings. With the in-breath, we remove their suffering. It comes to us and meets our motivation of purity, dissolves into nothing and disappears. If we're feeling a little bit stressed today, we'll imagine ourselves as sitting in the crowd of those who we are performing this practice for. As we breathe out, we think we give ourselves goodness. And as we breathe in, we imagine that we accept and heal all of our pain and suffering. And then returning to the all of the sentient beings, we think that as we breathe out, we give them goodness. As we breathe in, we remove their suffering. It meets the purity of our Bodhisattva intention, dissolves into nothing and disappears. Then, at the conclusion, We let go of the visualization and it disappears. We rest in a space of mind where there is no duality. There's no you, there's no sentient beings, there's no action between you. We let all of that go and rest. Thank you. Appreciate having the opportunity to sit and meditate with you a little bit today. That instruction on compassion meditation called Tonglen can be found in Kempo Carter Rinpoche's book, Dharma Paths, P-A-T-H-S, Dharma Paths. It's page 118, page 119. So that's the Dharma Talk for today, the Columbus KTC Dharma Talk for today. And there will be another Dharma Talk here next week, 1 o'clock. It will be on Facebook Live and possibly also on my YouTube page. So thank you to everyone for being here today. And I hope you'll keep breathing and remember to halt when you're hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and that you're able to do some of the practices that will help your mind this week. Keep all of us in your thoughts because we all need extra kindness and understanding in the upcoming weeks. I'm going to dedicate the merit of this session to all suffering beings. We'll sit quietly for a moment and imagine that we share all the goodness that has arisen in this session together, all the goodness we have generated from all of our intentions. And we dedicate all of it to the freedom from dualistic thinking of all beings and the bringing of inner stability to all beings. Okay, thanks again. And thanks for letting me get excited about the Columbus Karmatex and Choling's rebuilding. And of course, I will encourage you to go to columbusktc.org and donate. And I'll be on Facebook Live again in a few minutes just to bring everybody up to date on the fundraising. So thanks again, and best wishes to you today.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karmatex and Choling, or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.